And now, because he proved to be so expert at it last week, it's time for the weather for Lincoln from our man in Los Angeles.
And who better to ask than an international citizen of the world looking out his window in Los Angeles and seeing a rather gloomy, slightly rainy day there in the Lincoln area. It looks like it's 8 degrees centigrade there, so a bit brisk. It'll be reaching a high of 17 degrees and a low tonight of 7 degrees. You do have some clearing to look forward to. Alas, also some cooling down as we head into the weekend. Right now, humidity is at 80% and is accompanied by light, gentle winds blowing at roughly 13 kilometers an hour.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
And we always like to have at least two opinions on the weather. So, Gabriella, how does that gel with your weather forecast?
My weather is different.
Oh, my Lord. What weather have you got, Gabriella?
I've got highs of 15 degrees centigrade, a low of 10 degrees centigrade, cloudy start with patchy light rain and feeling warmer later on.
Ben Lewis.
Slight differences. Yeah. His is much, Bill's is much more thorough than mine, have to admit.
Ben,
showed me up there.
Where would you go? Would you go Gabriella in Gibraltar? Would you go Phil in Los Angeles?
I feel like we should stick to where we are because we're sort of halfway between them. Well, I don't know, more... I feel like we need to be halfway, but if we were halfway, we'd be in the middle of the sea, probably.
Oh. Well done, Phil. Well done, Gabriella.
Marcus. Nobody cares that it's going to be 75 degrees and sunny here in...
We know that never happens over here, so we don't get our hopes up.
Exactly. And if it did, we'd be very worried.
But why this is important is it points out our provinciality that still exists, at least where weather is concerned. Weather has not joined the globalist bandwagon, as so many industries have. No, it sticks to its local nature.
Precisely. Phil, one of the key elements that we always like to inquire of Gabriella, and you may remember you shared the airwaves many a time on the Midweek Drive. I mean, it's fair to say, Gabriella, there was a little yelp of joy I felt when you said you can speak directly to the Lehrmeister in Los Angeles.
It's been a long time.
Exactly. Several years, effectively. But we knew we'd get there in the end. We could have used postcards or tapping the table, but no, we used technology. But the question, of course, is... how is Frodo? You may have heard it in the ident there that wasn't voiced by yourself, Phil, in a rare kind of diversion from our usual voiceover experts, with or without her faithful friend Frodo. So would you like to find out from Gabriella how Frodo is this morning? Is he conscious or unconscious? Or in fact, what do you think he is? Do you think Frodo's conscious unconscious? Or
with what Frodo is... be it conscious or otherwise, what Frodo is would be useful to me.
Gabriella.
He's a pug.
A pug? Oh, your pug. Okay. How is Frodo?
Unconscious in his bed.
There you are. See, that's
how magical. How magical. Bring him one side of the corner of the earth to the other.
If only we could actually start building from pugs, Kim Jong-un, no problem whatsoever. All right?
This is so diplomatic. Exactly. Over a pug as well. It's brilliant.
Last night, Ben, of course, we left just as we had a sigh of relief that the asteroid, which was the size of the Rock of Gibraltar, actually missed the earth. How did that go down in Gibraltar, Gabriella?
We had a big laugh about it because it was just so random. It wasn't really that, well, I guess a million miles away from the Earth.
Did it have monkeys on as well?
Do you know, it's a good point, actually. There may well have been asteroidal chimps on the rock that were sort of keen to work through that whole process. The asteroid, in fact, boulder, basically dubbed 2014 J-Stray 25. It hurtled past the Earth at within 1.1 million miles. And again, it's as big as the Rock of Gibraltar. Did that make the news in Los Angeles, Phil?
Not that I am aware of.
You see, this is it. Once again, you know, if it's not sort of within the American territories, you know,
it's not happened.
You know, NASA scientists,
especially in Los Angeles. I mean, you asked Los Angeles in particular, and I mean, the asteroid, like the rest of all the celestial bodies, revolve around what we do here in Hollywood. So it's any other day.
Oh, well. Anyway, Ben, you were right in the midst of finding out more details about The Truth Is Out There, and I'm sure as soon as Tessa actually returns, which she's promised she will do next week. By the way, mention for Eva McDonald, she's having her driving lessons.
Now. Driving lessons? Yes. Let down. That's not good enough. Not good enough, Eva.
Yeah, Eva is out there in the drizzly conditions driving at this moment. Be afraid. Be very. No. It's it all will be well.
That's one for the traffic announcement the next hour.
I think so. Anyway, Ben, back to The Truth Is Out There, yeah. Which even Gabriella hasn't seen as yet, I don't think. But what sort
no.
of? No, exactly. Don't worry, Gabriella. It'll get there eventually. Yes. What was the question you left Phil with, which we said we'd pick up this morning?
Oh, it was about Alex Jones, I believe we were talking last night. Mm. And I think what I was keen to find out was what your opinions were on the alternative views that InfoWars and not just Alex Jones but the people he works alongside, what they bring up. I think you mentioned how they weren't exactly truthful on everything they do document, but be interested to hear your opinion on it, Phil. I want to know your stance on the whole
and
scenario.
Feel free to chip in from the perspective of the Gibraltar Chronicle as well, Gabriella. Meanwhile, Phil.
There is. Well, first of all, may I say that I certainly expected when Gabriella left her regular position there in studio that in a very short period of time she would become the queen of all media in Gibraltar and therefore be in a position to help me bring movies like The Truth Is Out There to the fine folks of Gibraltar. So maybe she can fill me in later on how that plan is coming to fruition. In terms of InfoWars and the alternative theories and that are espoused, what I did address earlier today is that there really does seem to have been a course correction of some kind for some reason over the last couple years, but especially leading into the election, that really stunned a lot of people I know who were longtime followers of InfoWars. Which seemed to always have espoused what we call here a very libertarian ideal, which is, you know, very much a very rigorous defense and, what would you say, advocacy for individual liberties in the face of nationalism and globalism. And so then it was very disturbing for a lot of people I know to see InfoWars and Alex Jones in particular moving into supporting what seems to be nationalistic agendas and policy, because so much of his research and so much of his opinion and investigations and inquiries seem to argue against that for so many years.
I think I completely agree with that, and I think this... I think what's difficult for a lot of people who do read InfoWars is how factual it actually all is. And I know I follow some of the people, some separate people, not Alex Jones personally, because I don't know, I find him a bit of a strange character in the nicest possible way.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that he provides this alternative view to mainstream media that allows people to almost look at different scenarios in a different way, and allows people to almost open their minds up to whatever opinions exist out there.
I think this is the good news. Even if people were to take the point of view that sites like InfoWars and others are, and even if they could prove it, that these sites traffic in rubbish, let's call it that, even if they could prove it, the one thing that has come through is that media, especially in this country, the news media, is for the first time in decades kind of reversing course and going back to making sure that they do what their mandate is, which is nothing less than hold people in power accountable. Somewhere along the line, and maybe because they're big corporations behind them, I don't know, but somewhere along the line, that stopped being the mandate It might have been the mandate that was taught in journalism school, but it wasn't the mandate taught in corporate corridors, where maybe it was about ratings. Maybe it was about pleasing sponsors. Maybe it was about fitting a particular niche in a marketplace. Whatever that might be, the idea that the journalistic raison d'etre is to hold those in power accountable seem to have become no longer the most important issue. And I think this whole discussion over what is real news, what is fake news, what is, a conspiracy, has led to a rediscovery of this. I really am starting to see it.
Gabriella, how does that chime with your own views as a journalist in Gibraltar?
I don't know, because I think it's just a different landscape for us. I guess holding people to account is always something that's important for us to do.
But I mean, the Spanish, for instance, there they are, happily sort of, on the other side of the whole thing, desperately sort of saying, oh, well, when Britain's actually left the European Union, we can take back Gibraltar, no problems. I mean, there are so many conspiracy theories you could put together with respect to that. I suppose, it would be the truth is out there, the Gibraltarian story. Anyway, I can appreciate that Gabriella wasn't necessarily expecting a mini seminar at this time in the morning. And besides, other things are moving along as far as Lincoln's First Community Radio Station is concerned. So, Phil, would you like to formally ask Gabriella those last two official questions?
Gabriella, did you enjoy your transatlantic, transcontinental connection with me on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?
Yes, it's been a very special one.
I thought it would be, Gabriella. That's why we didn't want to tease ahead too much.
It is a terrific joy to get to hear your voice again, Gabriella. And may I look forward to connecting with you again in the near future?
Yes, Alex needs to do it again.
Well, there we are, you see.
No pressure.
Well, as long as we can actually cultivate it so that the stars and the asteroids are aligned, because that's what we're waiting for.
Exactly. And Alex, as long as you are driving this technological ship, I trust I will be able to speak to Gabrielle again. And speaking of driving, as long as you're basically driving, you are always going to be able to swerve us out of the direction of an asteroid. I know, I've been in a car with you.
Richard Fitzwilliams, do you think it's a mad world?
Well, it depends which aspect of the world you're looking at.
Well, if we hypothesize...
Very surprising, I have to say, with elections being called, which I did not expect, that's one thing.
Richard, please.
It's another.
The very fact that we had the phrase fixed-term parliament applied should mean we're going to have an election every single year. It's the way that things go. If they said, no, we're going to have elections every single year, then it would be fixed-term parliament. You've got to take what politicians say and then invert. That's the key thing.
You certainly
invert.
Do, but I have to say, I never really appreciated the way that was pushed through. It was supposed to give the Liberals a feeling of security in the last coalition government, but it was tampering with the constitution, which I don't really like. And look what it meant, you're right, nothing.
Precisely, and those are the sort of statements which many of your fans globally have been keen to share and talk about in all sorts of ways. We have got one of your keen aficionados online at present, Richard, from the wonderful state of Los Angeles. Is it a state of mind? I don't know. Phil Leonis, welcome back to the production.
Phil.
Richard,
hello.
How are you?
And how very good to hear your voice.
You see, you weren't expecting that, Richard, were you? We could have done mystery voice, but we thought, no, we'll do full introduction times from that point of view. And what a way to share this, because it's the first time, gentlemen, we've been able to formally get you both on simultaneously, where Phil, as the winner of the annual challenge, which we introduced this year in terms of Oscar predictions...
I forgot that. Okay, well, I am looking forward to hearing your thoughts about both the films you're going to discuss, Richard. Their finest has not yet opened here, though I saw The Handmaiden quite a while ago. So I'm eager on both fronts to hear your thoughts.
It's very interesting that movies open in different countries at totally different times. I mean, The Handmaiden's only just opened here, as was simultaneously with Their Finest. Their Finest is very good fun. I mean, those of us who haven't heard of Dunkirk and the Blitz must be precious few, and it will be, I think, no surprise to anyone that the Brits still live off the days of their triumphs. And also, this is an opportunity, and you know very well that film industry is rather like La La Land in a sense, exuberant homage, I thought, to Tinseltown. So here we have the British film industry acting as propaganda during the war and directed by Lona Chirfig, who did, of course, an education. It's a charming and very lightweight movie, but it's about making a propaganda movie in the Second World War with a nod to the efforts of Katrine Coe, played by the luscious and gorgeous Gemma Arterton, a scriptwriter in charge of writing only female dialogue. How about that?
I believe that that was appropriate to the era.
Yes, I know, and you look back at the era and you think... Well, at least we've come a very, very long way from that. But also, the story of the propaganda film involves two sisters who set out in their drunken father's rickety old boat to rescue those brave wounded soldiers, of course, trapped in the beaches in Dunkirk. And when you've got Bill Nye and you've got him on good form, it can be worth seeing. And I hope you agree with me. Are you an admirer?
Oh, I'm an admirer of all these people. I'm a big fan of An Education. I thought that was a wonderful film. I have two eyes and a heart, so how could I not be a fan of Gemma Arterton? And there's very few, I mean, very few character actors like Bill Nighy working. One thing that I think is interesting is, you know, you talk about how far we've come. You know, vis-a-vis, you know, a woman scriptwriter who only works on women's dialogue. And I think about how things are better for women in the movie industry, certainly today. However, in terms of quality of roles for women, I feel like we're only getting back to what had been achieved in the 1930s, where so many of the great films were female-driven.
I have to say, I do wish things were very, 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 very different, and it was extraordinary that one reads so much about inequality of pay, the battle of older women, older actresses to get roles, all of this. But the 1930s, I mean, that does take us back 80 years, and no doubt about it, the at least things are... fought for. Jessica Chastain's interview a couple of days ago where she said that she will not accept a role where she is not paid equally. I only wish all actresses were able to do that, say that, and mean it.
And what an interesting segue discussing financial liberation for women and emancipation. It certainly is an interesting segue into the themes of The Handmaiden.
Precisely. But before we actually jump into that, Phil, if I can just briefly interject, we've been watching the trailer for Their Finest. Ben, from what Richard's been saying, from what Phil's alluded to, would he be checking out Their Finest?
I think I'd like to, yeah. I love a Bill Nye film anyway.
Just mention that he steals the show. I mean, this is, as I say, it's an amusing, entertaining, and... not a movie that you remember for a very, very long period of time, maybe, but he's Ambrose Hilliard, and he's someone who believes he's being relegated to second-class parts and is doing his absolute utmost to make sure he hugs as much of the screen as possible. And there are a lot of amusing sequences in this. I've also got to mention the lead scriptwriter, who is played by Sam Claflin, who's very high profile these days, and setting out to make a feature movie based on the Dunkirk rescue. And you prepare for a couple of hours of a very warm-hearted movie where you've got a romance developing between Catherine, played by, of course, the glorious Gemma. And I must just mention to Phil, I had the wonderful opportunity of seeing her on stage in Nell Gwynn, a story, of course, about the mistress of Charles II, and an absolute hit. Fantastic. Real treat a few months ago.
Clearly, those two movies for St. Trinian's managed to actually set her career on the right course, which has been well worth appreciating. Marvellous. Well done, Gemma Arterton. Moving on, as we need to do, because it is 25 minutes past 8 o'clock here, as far as Lincoln time is concerned, which I believe is the same in London, but in Los Angeles, of course, it's 25 past midnight. That's amazing.
Oh, my good gracious me. Well, it's a sort of time that I would settle down to view The Handmaiden for the second time, wouldn't nice. You, Phil?
I would, if it weren't the time of night where my cat is suddenly on the hunt and the prey seems to be all my paperwork I still have to get to do.
Oh, Fuzz Aldrin, honestly.
It's only 2.5 hours, but my goodness me, I was absolutely riveted by every single moment of it, directed by Park Chan-wook, in competition at Cannes, and a movie that should have done better at the awards ceremonies. I mean, it's The Building is an erotic psychological thriller during the Japanese occupation of Korea, and I was absolutely transfixed by this movie. I mean, there are echoes of Blue is the Warmest Color. There's some very explicit sex scenes, and they're beautifully worked in, I thought, to a story that, the narrative structure of this film, no spoilers, one's got to be so careful here, but what you see in the first part is, shall we say, explained in subsequent sections of the film.
Yes, I think the reason, initially the word was that this was, after several very good movies, this was the director's masterpiece. And I think the reason that audiences were a bit more lukewarm about it than that critical appraisal had to do with the third act, because people remember how they felt at the end of a movie. And that's why the ending is so important. And I think it was perhaps a mistake for them ever to leave the estate, narratively speaking, because that house had become maybe the most important character in the film. The way that house both influenced and revealed the personalities within its confines. And when they left that house to go to the city in Japan, right, it seemed to lose its narrative impulse, its momentum. And at that point, it was about resolution of plot rather than the continued inexorable revelation of character. That's at least how it felt for me, and I think that might have been a little bit of the letdown for audiences.
I have to admit that house, you mention houses and you mention atmospheres and the way they can almost define a movie sometimes. I mean, I think of The Damned in Visconti, set in that absolutely extraordinarily claustrophobic house. That was, of course, the 1960s. I think of The Others and the house there, or indeed the Road to Perdition. I mean, specific environments of that sort do have, with The Basement, of course, we can mention that this, incidentally, is a movie about a con man calling himself Count Fujiwara. He has a pickpocket named Tsuk-hi from a family of com artists to become the maid of a Japanese heiress, Lady Hideko, who Fujiwara plans to marry and then commit to an asylum in order to steal her inheritance. And the house is owned by her uncle, Kozuki, and Hideko is haunted by the suicide. For us, a very dramatic film. I have to say it held me throughout. But you may be right about the reason that it didn't score, as I had been hoping it would, or would have hoped it would, had I seen it before the various ceremonies. I mean, I was fascinated by the cast. And also, it's so lavish, it's glorious to look at. I mean, this is certainly an alluring, erotic movie, I thought. Psychologically, absolutely fascinating. And
You use the word psychologically, and I think we will throw around praise for movies being lavish to look at, and there's a certain connotation to that. It's important to note that this is really painstakingly constructed visually, so that even as it's lavish, every single frame is revealing something psychologically about what's going on. It's really masterful work.
Really fine. I agree totally. I mean, this is something that I wish had a wide audience, and I wish it had won more awards than it. Apparently, there were some wins.
And yet, Richard and Phil, according to film critic for The Telegraph, Tim Robey, it's hard to pinpoint the precise moment at which The Handmaiden, Park Chan-wook's deviously kinky period thriller, shifts from being a lascivious slice of art house delirium to a grueling, dislikable contraption which meretriciously sells out its source material. But that's what happens.
Well, Robey, Telegraph, and I'm assuming it's him, has just made an absolute idiot of himself by The Lost City of Z or Z.
But it's
so masterful, he compared it to a Gwynne Wrath of God.
Yeah, and your problem with that, Richard, you know, is Tim Robey saying what he feels.
But Tim Robey has said, well, I attacked the wrong Telegraph critic. But the fact he is talking junk. I mean, that is an appalling review, and I totally disagree
with it. It does, though, speak to this, as I said. I think for a lot of people, and he couldn't put his finger on it. I could put my finger on it. The moment when the movie left the house, he didn't like it, and he didn't know why he didn't like it. But I think that's it. I just think that house casts such a shadow that it's very difficult for people to be in this. It's almost a different film stylistically and visually when it ends up in Japan. And I think that's unsettling for people. I think people like to know all the time, oh, this is the movie I'm watching. And they want that movie to continue.
When that plot unravels, I choose my word very carefully there, my good grief.
Yes, yes.
Ben, is it the sort of movie that you'd check out given how disappointed you were by 50 Shades of Grey?
I'd give it a try. Whether it's something I'd actually like, I don't know. I think I'd have to tell you, but... Well, it's one of those films that could go either way, I think.
Well, this is from the director of Old Boy, so I don't think the comparison to 50 Shades of Grey, even though there's the sexual content, this is the director of Old Boy. So Ben, you should definitely give it a try. Nobody makes movies focusing on psychological conflict any better than this man.
Indeed, I agree, and I must say the comparison with 50 Shades of Grey horrifies me. I can put it
up. Rich takes offence to that, Alex. Withdraw your comment at once.
I'm just trying to work out where Hannah Brown will position the emoticon.
You designed, that was designed to shock.
Sometimes you just have to perk people off at 8:32.
It's a terrible thing to say. I mean, I'm just appalled.
Ben, if Hannah Brown is keeping her chart, which obviously she is, and she'll be hopefully back with us very shortly, but she's checking out where Richard will be placing the emoticon, I think it's two thumbs up, really, two smiley faces.
Yeah, I think so. If we can get one for Phil, one for her.
For Handmaiden and Their
Richard.
Finest.
Their Finest, yes. I mean, they're very different movies, obviously, and self-evidently, but Their Finest, I mean, one problem I did have with Their Finest, and that is I saw it at the London Film Festival, which is about... over 6 months ago now, and it was quite difficult to remember a lot of it. It's not one of those movies which has that much impact, but it's thoroughly enjoyable and it's heartwarming. To see Bill Nye, and I happened to see him in a Piccadilly bookshop, actually, a couple of days ago. I wished I could have had a word with him. I did after he was in Skylight, to say he was rather good at. His character was actually, it was one of these intriguing David Hare plays, which I saw first with Michael Gambon and secondly with him, and a very, very charming man. And interestingly, his Love Actually, of course there are a lot of top characters in that, is becoming a bit of a cult film. I'm most intrigued at that. I certainly didn't expect it.
Richard, we've still got to actually connect Phil with Ian Lennox's Cats, because it's a chance of Fuzz Aldrin to speak to Alderman
May
Dobo.
At an hour, an unearthly hour, appearing, and how splendid to see you, at least to hear you, and when are you coming back?
Yes, when are you coming back, Phil Lewis?
Alex is working diligently to bring me to those shores. So hopefully we'll be able to announce something soon. I was hoping there might be the possibility in June. It looks like maybe a possibility in August. We will see. But obviously, Richard, when I'm there, I will look forward to spending good time with you. And I enjoyed our little movie review tennis match, hitting the ball back and forth with you over the airwaves.
Well, yes, you had the advantage of being in situ, but you won, and next year I must hope to take the cup back.
As we said, Phil did offer you the opportunity to predict the BAFTAs as well as the Academy Awards. So it's BAFTAs. Phil, last two questions for Richard, please.
Richard, did you enjoy your telephonic link with us here this morning?
It was an extra special one. I certainly did.
And can we look forward to hearing from you in the near future?
Well, I hope we also look forward to hearing from you in the near future together.
It's so wonderful. It's just, I feel as though we're shelling a warm glow around the world. It's what life is all about, really. Courtesy of Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station.
Freedom is a dusty road heading to a highway. Californian skyways. Lead us where we want to.